The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's December 19th, 2022, to be rebroadcast on 91.7 FM, WHUS, and WHUS.org on December 21st, 2022. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment below. And if you are listening to this on audio podcast, then you just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can drop me an email. I am recording my shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them on our normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at WHUS 91.7 FM. All right, then. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. Ron's Rant of the Week. I cannot tell you how many times I hear this. So, just build it here. I know we're hearing a lot about this these days, but industry expert Jay Townley tells us why this is not so easy. I'll have more in the show. On a positive side, shout out to Billy Too Tall Dujack and Laura Mullaly. Best wishes from Fran and I for your speedy recoveries. Happy holidays also from Fran and I here at Bicycle
All of
Talk.
The holidays.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's my positive side. I got a mechanical minute and cycling tips also coming into the show. We're going to dive right into it right away. Time of the year to address the wind chill and your bicycle. Yeah, I know. I talk about this every year, but let's dive into the reason I am always appearing to be overdressed when I ride my bike outside. Oh, people come up to me all the time. Myself and my friend Pat Bowe, we're the two token old guys who are too skinny for our own good, and we are always freezing. And so we tend to get the comments of, how can you have that many clothes on? Aren't you uncomfortable? No, actually, I'm quite comfortable. But anyway, wind chill chart. We're going to talk about this. The bike speed is, in distilled air, is the same as wind speed. This is something a lot of people don't realize, okay? You look at a wind chill being, okay, the wind's blowing at 20 miles an hour out of the northeast, so therefore, you know, I have to deal with that as a wind chill. It's not just that. It also is your speed on the bicycle. So if it's a 70-degree day and you're going down a hill at 40 miles an hour, it's not 70 degrees anymore. Just throwing it out there. It's still warm. I'll give you that. But there is some heat loss as you build up your speed. So anyway, I've got a chart here that I'm playing around with, and I'll throw the link to it in on my Bicycle Talk Facebook page so you can link into this so you can see what this is all about. But anyway, let's see here. Where is it? Right here. Okay, this comes from a site which is known as, actually it's a medicine.mcgill.ca. It's the home of the winter cyclist called Ice Bike and other crazy people, as it says here. So there's a wind chill chart here because, you know, there are those who wish to ride in the cold. And the explanation here is that bike speed is into the still air is the same as wind speed. Cyclists are often moving at 15 miles an hour, even on very cold days. A quick glance at the chart indicates that you lose heat at a rate that seems much colder than outside temperature. While cycling in 40 degree still air, that's my absolute lowest point I will go outside, by the way. I just, after that, I haven't found enough clothing to keep me warm or the right clothing to keep me warm yet. You never know. Things could change. But anyway, at 15 miles an hour, 40 degrees will feel like 23 degrees at 15 miles an hour or 9 degrees below freezing. Does this mean you could get frostbite at 40? No, but you will cool down at the same rate that you would if it was really 23 degrees out. You'll never get colder than it really is. The wind chill temperature is a measure of relative discomfort due to combined cold and wind. It was developed by Sipple and Passel in 1941, and it's based on psychological studies of the rate of heat loss for various combinations of ambient temperature and wind speed. The wind chill temperature equals the actual air temperature when wind speed is 4 miles per hour or less. At higher wind speeds, the wind chill temperature is lower than the air temperature and measures the increased cold stress and discomfort associated with wind. And of course, there's a big formula here as to how to calculate it and all that. But anyway, the effects of wind chill depend strongly on the amount of clothing and other protection worn, as well as age. I'm old. Health and body characteristics. Wind chill temperatures near or below 0 degrees Fahrenheit indicate that there's a risk of frostbite or other injury to exposed flesh. The risk of hypothermia from being inadequately clothed also depends on the wind chill temperature. So that's your explanation as far as this goes. The second opinion they have here is there are some doubts about the accuracy and usefulness of a wind chill chart. First, the table seems to suggest that standing out in 20 mile per hour wind on a 40 degree day would yield a temperature of about 10 degrees below freezing. Clearly, that's not the case. You can't get frostbitten unless the temperature is at or below freezing. Wind chill only measures how fast exposed flesh will lose heat, not how cold that temperature that flesh will chill to. So it's not like you're going to get frostbite from your 15 mile an hour, 23 degree exposure, because it has to go below freezing in order to happen. That's where the rules change. It's how you feel. It's how you feel and how quickly it can cool your body down. Once your body gets cooled down, it has a hard time heating back up. Unless you live where we do, where the next turn you make is going to be going up another hill. And then you get nice and warm by the time you get to the top of the hill, and then you go screaming down the hill and cool back off again. Hence, wear the proper clothing for the downhill so that therefore you won't freeze to death when you're going downhills or feel like you're freezing to death. Let's put it that way. So that's why I'm a big, big proponent of wearing tights and long sleeves and base layers and all the and windbreaking materials like, you know, light nylon jackets and all that. I've been telling people this for years. One of the staples that you have let's go over that little bag that you put behind your seat. What do you carry in there? You carry a set of tire levers, and you carry possibly a tire boot or a repair kit of some sort, just in case you get a really bad gash in your tire, a set of tire levers. Maybe you're a CO2 person, maybe you're a pump person. You've got something there to take care of that problem too. Maybe you carry a small, you know, essential first aid like alcohol wipes or whatever, that or bandages that you could use to help somebody or yourself if you have a problem. That's your little seat pack that you have behind your bike. What if you took that seat pack and went, you know, I'm gonna just put a little bigger one on there, increase the size. By the way, these are great holiday gifts. Anyway, you put maybe a little bit bigger bag on there, enough so you can take one of those little tiny, like that right over there. Bring that over here, Franny, that orange jacket over here. It's right over there behind my printer. So you get one of these jackets that is a very, very light nylon jacket like this one right here. So it looks really big right here, but when you take something like this and you crumple it up and you make it really, really tiny, and I'm just doing this like by crumpling, I can put this in my rear pocket and I can also put it into a seat bag. So now I have my essential piece of equipment that I carry with me, just like carrying a spare tube. All right. This is good because you can actually, you'll find this beneficial. Believe me, when I go out on a day that there may be some question as to what the weather may be as per the temperature dropping, or maybe even the possibility of a shower or a light mist when I'm out riding, and I'm dressed properly when I start, but that may happen during my ride, I pull out my nifty little jacket right here, I put it on, and life is better. If you don't own one of these, you need to own one of these. They're great. They're small. They're again, I mean, it fits in the palms of my hand. It's very, very small, and it makes a huge difference and a big difference in comfort on a very uncomfortable day. Anyway, going back to the second opinion here. Wind chill reports tend to exaggerate the actual rate at which you feel cold. The reports end up being discounted by most people who have experience in cold weather because it does not tend to agree with personal experience. Well, you know, whatever. The U.S. Weather Service is thinking about revising the wind chill chart, perhaps by adopting the Canadian standard, which is below here, and I'll talk about that in a minute. That standard is still not accepted by the public because it's very difficult to judge the feeling of a watt per square meter. Consequently, the most weather reports simply convert the official measurement to something easier to understand, back to the old wind chill chart. So the Canadian chart is, let's see, how do they do this? This is kilometers in Celsius, so it's going to get a little bit different here. Let's see if I can figure out what we got here. So it's going to be, you're going to have to do some conversion here, but at 10 kilometers per hour, and you're at 0 degrees. I'm not quite sure I understand this. I am going back to the old chart because the old chart is much easier to read, as was explained in this. So if you're out and the temperature is, let's say it's 30 degrees Fahrenheit, all right? And you're going 5 miles per hour, or the wind is 5 miles per hour. It's really 25 degrees by wind chill. If you're going 10 miles per hour, it drops to 21 degrees. If you're going 15 miles an hour and it's 30 degrees out, the wind chill drops down to a whopping 19 degrees. So that just gives you an idea. Now, let's say you are going down a hill at, say, 30 miles an hour, and it's 30 degrees out. Your wind chill is now 15 degrees. So you can see what happens here. It doesn't require a lot. If your speed increases, let's say you're going down a really big hill and you hit a whopping 50 miles an hour and it's 30 degrees out, the wind chill is 12. All right, feels like 12, not good. And of course, if you're at 30 degrees, you are now at the exposure level where you will be dealing with frostbite. So add the factor that you're feeling cold and then you also are below freezing and you can actually expose yourself to frostbite. It's kind of a big deal. It's a really, really big deal. So you need to pay attention to the wind chill. It can get very, very technical, but anyway, it really goes by subjective measures of relative discomfort. That's really what it comes down to. So everyone has an opinion. Some people do really well in the cold. My friends that do well in a cold, they say, well, I just have more insulation than you do because you've got no, you're skinny, you've got no meat on your bones, so therefore I guess I'm small, so therefore I don't hold the heat real well. What I have found is, and I remember reading this and I should have prepared this before the show, that there were some experiments that were being done years ago about keeping your kidneys warm when you're riding your bike or when you're outside and exposed in any way, because all the blood flows back through the kidneys, and because of that, Fran can probably verify this, but because all that blood flows back through the kidneys and now you have sufficiently cooled down the blood that has gone out to your fingertips and your toes and maybe even your ears and nose, that blood has now cooled down. By the time it goes back through, it will get warm back up again. So there were actually, I think in the motorcycle industry started this years ago, they had these special belts that you would put on that had warmers that were right there in the middle of your back there where your kidneys are. And it would keep the kidneys warm and therefore keep you warmer because of that. Which brings it all back to the same thing that we have all learned over the years, or hopefully have all learned over the years, and that is keep your core warm and your body will be warmer. So, and then I heard the other day when I was listening to something and they said, the old wives' tale, wear a hat and you'll be warmer. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a wives' tale. I'm not going there. When I wear a hat, I am warmer. There's no question about it. But
it can be,
anyway,
just because it's an old wives' tale doesn't mean it isn't true.
That's true. That's a good point. Just because it's an old wives' tale does not mean it's not true. But and you could look that up if you wanted to look that up, Franny, and tell me whether the hat will really keep you warmer or not. But anyway, that's my wind chill story, and it happens every year about this time of year because it's getting cold out. And next week up here in the Northeast, where you know, we do experience something called winter. We're going to have winter, like real winter, like cold, cold, cold days. Don says, what about special vulnerability of extremities, feet, hands, face to wind chill? Yeah. I especially bundle up on them. I agree with you, Don, and that's where I learned this valuable lesson from my old friend Don Ward, who actually made these things called bar mitts and made them quite popular. And the bar mitts cover over your handlebars and they really keep your hands warm. Our friend Dave has got them and he swears by them now and he rides whenever. He doesn't seem to care. He's one of those, I think he's a more durable winter person than I am. I know he is. And he put bar mitts on his bike, and he's like, these are the answer. And I agree. Drop bar bikes, mountain bar bikes, it doesn't really matter. Bar mitts really are a game changer when you're trying to keep your hands warm. Totally makes a big difference. There was another company that had a product called Climits, which worked really good too. I used to have a set of those before that I used on a flat bar mountain bike. Those work really good. There's a ton of different stuff out there right now. But the bar mitts on road bike handlebars, I don't care what they look like. I know they're ridiculous looking. I know that some people get fearful about how am I going to get my hands out of these things. But you know what? They work. They work really good. And they make an enormous difference. You don't really have to wear a very heavy glove at all when you have bar mitts on your bike. You actually have more dexterity because you're just using a thin, long finger glove and you're plenty, plenty warm in there. Even in some cases, you could, you know, as it's getting warmer, you could be back to your short finger glove or no gloves at all and still be quite warm. Makes a huge difference. When you think about the components that are on a bicycle, they're especially like brake levers, you're going to see that a lot of them are made of metal. And there's nothing worse than picking up something that's cold and that is metal. When it just transfers right to your hands, it just feels awful. The wives' tale is that most of your heat loss comes from your head. Heat loss comes from any exposed part of your body. That's from Billy. Thanks, Billy. Appreciate that. Yeah, pretty much, you know, it's the open skin thing more than anything else, I think. And once again, going back to the bar mitts, when you've got cover over those metal surfaces, the metal surfaces stay warmer, so therefore your hands stay warmer. It really makes a huge difference. But I'm not big on promoting products on the show, but that one is just, that's a lifesaver. That one really is. It makes a huge difference. If someone could create a bar mitt for my feet, I would be a super happy guy. But somehow that has not quite worked yet. And yes, I know there are all sorts of booties and other things you can do and winter boots and all that fun stuff. But, you know, I'm still experimenting with that. So we shall see. You never know. So anyway, that's my talk on wind chill. I think I spent enough time on that today. And if you want to know more, I will put that link over onto the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. So you can kind of take a gander at that and see what you think and see if that works for you. So what else do we have here? That is next on the list here is, okay. It's the what do you want for a holiday present talk. And, you know, in previous episodes of this during this time of year, I've gotten into lists of things that are like really, really nice to give as gifts. If you're looking for something for your favorite cyclist, if you're looking for, some way of giving information to your family about what you may want, I gotta go back to the local bike shop thing. You know, if you have a local bike shop that you use, if you have a number of items that you are looking for or would be very happy with, even if it's, you know, a couple more spare tubes, nothing difficult, makes great stocking stuffers. You always need them. You always need them. So those are like essentials and really good things. Then, you know, give your list of wants and needs to your local bike shop, like a gift registry of sorts, and then point your friends and family to the local bike shop, and they'll have the list there, and then they can just check things off as you go along. Makes a lot of sense. I used to do it at my bike shop, and it really, you know, it just makes a huge amount of sense, because when people come in, they actually get you things that you want or need. That's kind of a clever idea, isn't it? So I'm a big believer of your local bike shop. And or another one is I happen to wear my Rails to Trails shirt here today because it's a good group. It's a good thing. They're doing great things, putting these wonderful trails out there, which gets a lot of people out riding their bikes that wouldn't normally get out and ride their bikes. Those of you who are serious cyclists, you're from a different game. You know, you're like, I can go out and ride on the road. I'm okay with that. No big deal. But when you have someone who's beginning, just getting started in cycling, the trails are great. They're awesome because they're protected and they're flat and they're, you know, they have a lot of purpose there. And they're really not made as much for the real serious cyclist as they are for the people who are beginning. The only reason I say that is because there's what I call a lot of trail abuse out there, which means people riding on the trails that are riding at an exceptional speed, which is not necessarily the same speed as the people that they are passing or riding with. And so at that, I have ranted in the past, and I will continue to rant because I see it all the time at the cyclists that are out there training on the rail trail. I used air quotes there for those of you who can't see what I'm doing right now and are listening to this. But if you're that cyclist who decides that the local trail has, because it is protected and because it is flat or whatever it is, that it's the perfect place to go out and do your training efforts, stop, be smart, don't be stupid. It's not a good idea. It's really not a good idea. It's not your place to do that there. Find a place where it is safer for you to do it. I understand that there's traffic. I get it. If you want to put in a hard workout and you feel it necessary to go out and do something like that, put your bike in a trainer and go on Zwift or wherever, and do your hard training there. Come to my morning 5:45 a.m. class. I'll make you work hard. I'll make you know that you had something that you did something before the hour is over. But please, please, please don't do your workouts on the rail trail. All right, I said it. I'm moving on. I'll get away from it. But anyway, back to your local Rails to Trails or your local town advocacy group or maybe your state advocacy group, they can always use a little extra financial help out there. So if you have a friend or family member who is looking to help in some way or if they are looking for a unique gift of some sort, have them gift financially in your name as your holiday gift. It's a nice idea. It's just a really nice idea. So anyway, that's it. I'm not going to go heavy duty into all that because I have other things I need to talk about today, which I will bring up the original rant, which is the brutal truth about reshoring. Okay, why can't we just make it here? What is the deal with that? You know, you would think that, you know, it's like with the supply problems that we've been having over the last couple of years since COVID hit, and all of a sudden, you know, all of our products are coming not from here anymore. They're coming, a lot of products come out of China, or I'm just going to say Asia in general, because there's Malaysia, China, there's Korea, there's Taiwan, there's a lot of the Asian countries are producing products that we use here in the United States. And now, when we have supply chain issues, and COVID was the big interrupter for that, everything came to a screeching halt. It is now coming around, and I think I reported on this last week, that the supplies are actually up again, and that product is starting to come back into the country at a fairly regular basis, and that I know that some of the retailers are definitely feeling like their back rooms are starting to fill back up with some things that they need. Not entirely. I know also of someone who is telling people April as far as deliveries on product for new bicycles. So it's not over yet, I won't say, but it is definitely starting to change a lot. But the big question was, well, why can't we just make those things here? You know, why can't we manufacture products here in the United States that we can then sell to our customers? And so anyway, Jay Townley, who has been an industry expert for years and has written about all types of things, wrote about this. He talked about the brutal truth about reshoring. So there's a lot of chatter in the bicycle business of late about reshoring bicycle and e-bike manufacturing to the U.S. Anyone who follows Jay's articles and op-eds knows that he is a big-time, long-time proponent of reshoring, bringing your bicycle and e-bike manufacturing back to America or North America, or nearshoring, being North America, Mexico, Canada, or both. Okay. To be clear, manufacturing is not assembly. The two terms of art have different meanings when applied to the bicycle business. They also require different levels of capital investment. However, both require the same level of component support. And here's where we get into the can of worms. Okay, manufacturing means the rolling of the tubing or processing tubing that is formed, welded, or otherwise joined into a frame, fork, or other frame configuration. This makes up the primary subassembly of a bicycle that may be coated in some form and joined with other sub-assemblies like wheels or electric propulsion systems, and then assembled and packaged the required components to create a complete bicycle or e-bike to be used by consumers. In short, the bicycle manufacturer fabricates the frame and the fork and combines them with all the required sub-assemblies and components into a packaged product for final assembly by the consumer or commercial assembler. Something just fell in our house.
Check.
You can check if you want. It's probably nothing major. It might be a picture falling off a wall or something. I just did some cleaning in the bath. Sounded like the center bathroom. Anyway, assembly means purchasing the frame, fork, or other frame configuration pre-built. This becomes the bicycle's primary sub-assembly and may be coated in some form and joined with other sub-assemblies like wheels, electric propulsion systems, and then assembled and packaged with pre-required components to create a complete bicycle or an e-bike for use by consumers. We'll worry about it later, Franny. Thanks. The short version is a bicycle assembler buys everything. okay, and then assembles and packages the various pieces into a complete bicycle or e-bike for use by consumers. Detroit Bicycle Company, owned by Cardinal Cycling Group, is currently the largest bicycle manufacturing plant in the United States, with an annual production estimation of 10,000 to 15,000 completed bicycles per year. Bicycle Corporation of America, owned by Kent International, is the largest bicycle assembly plant in the U.S., with annual production estimated at 300,000 complete bikes per year. BCA, Bicycle Corporation of America, has the capability to assemble far more complete bicycles and e-bikes and will eventually add all of the machinery and other equipment required to become a manufacturer. The primary limitation to growth to a realistic annual production of around 1 million complete units a year is the availability of component parts in country that do not have to be imported from offshore. All the business entries currently involved in bicycle and e-bike manufacturing and assembled in the U.S. know and understand the nature and meaning of this limitation. It is significant. So let's take a look at this. I'm just going to jump off track on this just for a second. So we take a look at major component manufacturers for the bicycle industry, and we're looking at, obviously, Shimano is big. They're a big deal. They kind of control and own the bicycle industry as it is, and at least they did back when I was in the industry, and I think they continue to do that also. SRAM is the next one in line and is currently making major inroads to putting product on bicycles, or hanging the jewelry on the frame, as we like to call it. And they are also one of the major suppliers in the industry. Campagnolo out of Italy is another one of the major suppliers in the industry. But Campagnolo is going to be high-end only, primarily. I don't think they do anything low-end anymore. Or their low-end is not low enough for what most of the entry-level bikes would ever need. So, but Campagnolo is in there too. And so now we have three major component packages that are out there, two of which are primarily manufactured in Asia. So there's your problem. As much as you want to really try to bring it all over here, you can't bring it all over here until you start having a clear competitor of component manufacturer right here in the United States. I believe, and I may not be correct on this, so someone can correct me if I'm wrong, that pretty much most of the SRAM product that's out there is manufactured in China. Shimano uses Malaysia, and they still have some product coming out of Japan, but probably not a whole lot. And I'm not real sure how much they use Taiwan, but I know that that Malaysia is where they're getting kind of their low to mid-range product, and that's where they're bringing a lot of that back in. But anyway, let's go back to Jay's story here, just so we can get a little bit more insight on this. So we're going to start by following the money from retailers in the U.S. upstream and follow the revenue to the original equipment manufacturers and their subcontractors and component suppliers. When a consumer demand was high, as it was in the second quarter of 2020 and about the third quarter of 2022, everybody paid full price and more. The discounted and price cutting that plagued the bicycle business and drove down gross margins for decades disappeared. It was replaced with fluid cash flow and high gross margins of profit for retailers, bicycle and e-bike brands, OEMs and component brands and manufacturers. For the first time in decades, suppliers had the upper hand. Retailers, including Walmart, had to pay the price, including ocean, air, and trucking costs, to get relatively hard-to-get finished bicycles and e-bikes. Giant and Shimano both made it clear that they were not going to expand production capacity by building new manufacturing facilities. They were looking at the probability that the so-called boom wasn't going to last long enough for them to finish plant expansion before the added capacity would no longer be needed because the consumer demand would recede. They did add shifts and worked what weekend and holidays they could, but all within existing manufacturing facilities. During the pandemic, a lot of money was wasted, but a lot of money was also made up and down the U.S. bicycle supply chain that begins in Asia. Back to what I said about Asia. Consumer demand has indeed receded, and the U.S. bicycle business is headed for an inventory-induced shakeout that will probably last from 3 to 5 years. Price cutting and discounting have already returned, along with the brands trying to get their best to manipulate retail pricing. Pricing power has shifted back from suppliers to retailers, although mostly in mass, full-line sporting goods, and specialty outdoor channels. Bike shops are currently in a battle with brands over retail price control. With all that said, why would publicly traded component brands want to invest in U.S. manufacturing and explain investments to shareholders when they can continue to bank profits earned during the pandemic and pay the dividends to their investors? So here we go. It's all about money, folks. It is all about money. So I'm going to paraphrase here a little bit, but anyway, it goes on to state, why am I an advocate for reshoring and nearshoring? I am also a realist who also worked in a large U.S. bicycle manufacturing company for 14 years before it had to take advantage of globalization and shut down domestic operations and become a larger importer. He spent the next 10 years supervising the company's purchasing and logistics operations that involved buying complete bicycles, fitness equipment, and accessories primarily from Taiwan, China, Singapore, and Japan. So what he observed since 1990 is bicycle manufacturing and assembly, as well as component manufacturer, leaving the United States and North America, relocating in Asia to be closer to manufacturing OEMs, primarily China, with the high end in Taiwan. The American bicycle business and market have become import dependent, and this takes us full circle back to why reshoring is difficult and a long way off. There's a limit to the level of reshoring that can be realized because there's a limit to the revenue and profit that can be made as long as components have to be imported from outside the United States, from outside North America. It's a double-edged sword because there are tariffs on imported componentry that have to be kept within a reasonable range. If it's too high, as with the 25% punitive Section 301 tariffs on imports from China, this will discourage domestic assembly and manufacturing. If it's too low, this will discourage component manufacturers from investing in the U.S. because the domestic industry isn't protected. So, you know, it's a tricky thing. It's a tough road, really. So since bicycles and so you go, yeah, but look what we're doing in this business. Look what we're doing here. And, you know, I was in the solar industry for the last 2 years of my quote unquote working life. I'm still working, but that's beside the point. I am officially semi-retired. We'll leave it at that. The solar industry is now manufacturing panels back in the United States, and some, not a lot. But there's most of them are, again, still coming out of Asia. But there is still the possibility of the manufacturing here because the technology is advancing very, very rapidly. Computer industry is the same way. We're starting to look at bringing the microchip industry back into the United States. And bicycles and e-bikes are just not high-tech. They're not going to attract much, if any, support from the government or private investors. The financial support is going to have to come, or at least start, from within the bicycle and e-bike business. So, okay, maybe Elon Musk should sell Twitter and jump into the bike industry. Oh boy, that opened a huge can of worms, I'm sure. So the support of state and local government in providing tax incentives and relief, as well as employment incentives, will be important. However, the most important incentives have to be structured to make it attractive for component manufacturers to build plants in the United States or in North America if there's going to be any appreciable reshoring of bicycle and e-bike manufacturing. That would mean companies like Shimano and SRAM would have to move their manufacturing into the United States, and it would have to be profitable enough for them to do that, which means they need a much higher volume of product going out because they can make it less expensive in other places, and they're shipping all over the world. So it would have to be for a particular domestic market, and those of us in that domestic market would have to understand that we're probably going to pay more to have products made by these major manufacturers here, and to be able to keep it all moving forward. So, despite geopolitical tensions between America and China and Taiwan and China, the U.S. bicycle business is finding it difficult to extract itself from China. Even moving to Vietnam or Cambodia is difficult because of the dependency on raw materials and components from sources in China. There's no easy answer, and the U.S. bicycle business is going to have to do careful planning and line up local and state political and financial support, as well as advance of the turning of the first shovel of dirt. Perhaps even more important is the effort that local and state governments are going to have to make to attract and convince a sufficient number of component manufacturers to commit to the U.S. to support domestic assemblers and manufacturers who can then grow their businesses with brands and retailers. Crafting a plan, then being patient and flexible, is going to be required if reshoring is going to actually happen at any scale in the United States. So this is a great article. I love reading what Jay Townley has to say. He knows a lot about the bicycle industry. He's been in it for a very long time. He is his consulting company is humanpoweredsolutions.com, and you can check that out and see what you think, and you'll find lots of interesting information that Jay is connected to, very, very connected in the bicycle industry. So remember, this came from Bicycle Retailer Magazine, and a lot of this was read from an article that was written by Townley called The Brutal Truth About Reshoring. So in no way did I create any of this. This was something I pulled from Bicycle Retailer. Anyway, that is that's my talk about reshoring, and I think it's not in our near future. I just don't see it. Latest news from Bicycle Retailer: tariff exclusions extended another 9 months. So remember how we had all those tariffs that went on during the previous administration? They are still being excluded for another 9 months, and we were watching that carefully a couple of years ago because it was a big deal in the bicycle world. There's a company called Gyrur, which has recalled about 3,300 e-bikes because the battery packs can ignite. Yeah, okay. So it's a Chinese e-bike maker, and they're recalling 3,000 of their C3 e-bikes because batteries can ignite. Brings us back to be really careful out there if you're buying an e-bike, and make sure that you're getting a battery product and a recharging product that is compatible with our standards and fire codes. For instance, you wouldn't want to burn your house down because, you know, you bought a cheesy e-bike product on, let's say, one of those sites online. I'll just leave it at that. And then, you know, your bike starts on fire and burns out the entire apartment complex that you live in, or your house, or whatever. So there's a real problem there. I would say really keep your eyes open. If you have purchased one of those, I would keep my eyes open on recalls all the time because you just never know. And again, as I have recommended in the past with recharging any kind of rechargeable product, doing it on a concrete floor is a very safe way to do it. So if that charger and battery should decide to ignite, there's nothing to burn. So just keep that in mind. It's not a bad idea. It's a good safety way of doing it. All righty then. What else do we have here on our list today? Some pieces out of Streets Blog. I got a bunch of stuff I'm going to have to go back to another time. So, the Columbia. Columbia, not the town that's next to the town that I live in, but Columbia, the country. Okay.
Columbia.
Five lessons on sustainable transportation from Colombia. Colombia is not a it's not a wealthy nation by any means. It's not really known to be a place that has a lot of money and a lot of investment in. This particular author, this is from Streets Blog. The author on this is Kia Wilson, and they made a trip to Colombia to see what was going on. So Colombia came up with this thing called Cyclovia. And it says here, Cyclovia is even cooler and more pragmatic than you think. Since it launched way back in the 1970s, Bogota's famous Cyclovia program has inspired copycat events around the world. Today, with little more than a few yellow police barriers at intersections, more than 75 miles of the capital city streets are closed to cars every Sunday and major holiday, opening up that scarce urban space for the exclusive use of people who bike, walk, and roll. Colombia's second largest city, Medellin, has a similar program too. It would be more accurate, though, to say that Cyclovia closes many of the Bogota's streets in one direction, leaving the other open for the city's famously extensive bus system, emergency services and vehicles, and yes, even drivers, to move about freely. Those routes, though, are almost all massive multi-lane thoroughfares, often with a permanent protected bike lane running down the middle. So it's pretty dramatic transformation and a pragmatic way to cut car travel fast. Critical detail is rarely mentioned in the U.S. press, and many U.S. Cyclovia-style events, unsurprisingly, attempt to close down roads from curb to curb, leaving people who must drive with no route into the neighborhood. And that might be the right approach in some settings, but in others, being a little more targeted seems to pay off. I rarely had to leave Cyclovia Network during my time riding in the city, and the routes were full of people of all ages and abilities, though I didn't take enough pictures. So anyway, quick builds count, especially on budget. This is not a very rich nation, but they are not a wealthy country. It's 2021 GDP was $3.14 billion, slightly less than the state of Connecticut. Got that? That's where we are right here. The entire country, the GDP, was less than the state of Connecticut. The state of Connecticut, which has just 1/14 of Columbia's population, and it manages to do a heck of a job, more than most American cities when that he's visited with relatively little available. That includes a fascinating mix of both drool-worthy off-road paths on road lanes and buffered planters, armadillo humps, and plastic jersey barriers, or even more informal routes that double as sidewalk extensions. So they're working with less money, and they're putting out a lot more than what we have here in Connecticut or anywhere else. Now, Connecticut also is about the size of someone's county somewhere else. I think San Diego County and Connecticut are about the same size, by the way. Just so you know, yeah, I think it's close. I think it's really, really close. So Columbia has done just a really, really good job of setting up an infrastructure which works. It's really interesting because they have these small, like, jersey barrier-looking pieces. And if I get a chance, I will cut and paste and clip these over onto the Bicycle Talk page. But They only sit about, I would say, maybe 8 inches high, but they're angled barriers that if you hit them with a car, they're going to push the car back out into the street, just enough to keep people out of the cycling and walking area. And it just makes a lot of sense. And they're inexpensive, and they look like they would be very, very, very easy to put in. So they're being very innovative. And, you know, these could also be compared to if you're going into a parking lot, sometimes you'll find a barrier in the parking lot where you drive your car up to it and the front wheels hit and then you can't go forward anymore, because that's what these things kind of look like. They kind of look like that. So enough to really, you know, keep the cars where they belong and the bikes protected at the same time. Super, super easy. They've got great bureaucracy that's behind this, and a lot of their great transportation is invisible. A lot of what makes Colombian city transportation so great, of course, isn't photographable. But I were remiss not to mention that a slew of policy incentives that aren't aimed at tourists, they're not aimed at tourists like me. So it's not easy to see it until you're there, but once you're there, you feel much, much safer when you're riding your bike than you would on our streets here. So kind of interesting, the country of Colombia, which is not much different than the state of Connecticut, except that, you know, For many reasons, they've taken a good initiative of taking care of it, and they're way, way bigger in population. They've done a really bang up job. So, what's this mean to us here in the United States? We got a lot of work to do. That's what it means. It means that we're not even close to getting anywhere near where we need to be, as far as making sustainable travel out there that we could use with bicycles or pedestrian travel or anything, or even, you know, buses. You know, we're just way off, and these things need to change. They totally need to change. We talk about, you know, bringing manufacturing back into the United States. Well, what if everybody rode a bike? Then it would be a good investment to invest in a bicycle company that was manufacturing here in the United States, because we'd be moving more bicycles, more butts on bikes, as we always used to say in the bicycle industry. So these are all things that we need to pay attention to and you know, move forward with. I have a lot of other information here to talk about, but I'm going to have to push it on to the next show, because there's great information out about electric cargo bikes that I would like to talk about a little bit more, because people are starting to catch on to this, and they're catching on to the fact that, you know how hard it is to park a UPS truck in New York City and take your products out of that for delivery into the the place you're delivering to, and the amount of space that takes up, and how many delivery trucks there are in New York City. We could make a huge difference by just changing it over to e-bike cargo bike travel. Just makes a huge, huge difference. So anyway, we'll talk more about that in a future show, because I'm really fascinated by it. We have one more show in 2022, and that is it, and that will be next week. So Fran and I will be here for that, and we'll talk a little bit more about New Year's resolutions, because that it is that time of year that you start thinking about that sort of thing. And hopefully you'll have a lovely holiday. Hanukkah started yesterday. Christmas is on the 25th.
You made the best latkes.
And I made the best latkes. I did. I made really good latkes last night. Those were the best ones I think I've made. They were crispy. They were quite good.
Those air fryer.
Anyway, yeah, I used an air fryer, but for any of you who need a reference to that, who like to cook. I like to cook because I like to eat. So that's a good thing. And, you know, I got to take care of the queen over here. You know, she likes to eat, too. And she likes it when I cook for her, too.
Yeah, I do.
Guys or significant partners that might be out there, there's a real gift being able to know how to cook.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Keeps the peace, so to speak. So anyway, that's all I got for this week, or that's all I'm going to cover for this week. It's not all I have. I have so much more to talk about, but we'll talk about it in the future. What I would like you to think about is your New Year's resolution. What is your New Year's resolution? And if you'd like to post that on my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, I'd love to hear what you have to say. So I'll start a link there, and hopefully we can get people to contribute to it. But, you know, what would you like to see in, not necessarily yourself, but in whatever you want to bring up for the next year, for 2023? What would you like to see? So let's think about that. We're going to talk about it a little bit more on next week's show. We always have a New Year's show, a New Year's Eve show. And we go over, you know, basic stuff like that. And then we have the next side of that, which is the resolution. Viva la resolution, by the way. We're about to see a major input at the local gyms, because everyone gets it in their mind that they have to go and get themselves back in shape. And, you know, what better way to do it than on a bicycle? That's why it's Bicycle Talk. That's why I'm here. That's why I like to talk about bicycles all the time, because I really think that they would solve all the problems in the world if everyone would just ride one. So we're going to move on to what's going on in events. www.made.bike, a new industry and consumer bike event, is coming to, it's coming to Portland, Oregon in the Rose Quarter, at the 24th to the 27th in 2023. The bicycle game is on right now in Hartford at the Historic Society in Hartford, the State Historical Society at 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut. Check it out. It's way cool. It's way cool. There's things there you didn't even realize were happening here in Connecticut. The UCI Cyclocross World Championships will begin on Saturday, February 4th, and end on Sunday, February 5th. We have some New England riders in there that are going on to the world team. Finishing points. So, how do you feel about wind chill? Are you aware of how dangerous it is? And then just build it here. Not so easy, is it? Continued shout outs to Too Tall, Billy, and Laura. Don't forget about the bicycle game in Hartford and the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. Bicycle advocacy. Make it a nice holiday gift in the name of bicycle advocacy. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Please support your local bike shop. Wish them a happy holiday. Respect one another. It's 2022. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, tell everyone you know, and finally take on the Pedal and Ron Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it for a day and use your bike instead. You may surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or just put a little like thing right down here. Nice little smiley face from Chris. Thank you. So anyway, yes, it is better late than never, Chris. Very good. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening.